John Blake presents Something Wicked, The Lives, Crimes and Deaths of the Pendle Witches, written by Carol Ann Lee and read by Emma Gregory. This audiobook comes with a supplementary PDF where you can find a map of the key sites during the trials, family trees of those involved, as well as an intricate dramatis personae to help you navigate through their stories. You will also find a glossary and a list of important dates relevant to the trials you are about to hear about. I care not for thee. Elizabeth Southerns. A sense of righteousness is not incompatible with doing terrible things. J.K. Rowling. Introduction. Cornwall, 1976.
I don't believe in witches.
I am 7 years old, standing with my parents in the shop attached to the Museum of Witchcraft and Magic in Boscastle. No sooner have I finished speaking than a book on a nearby carousel sails through the air and lands at my feet. The man behind the till looks amused and perplexed. He comes out from behind the counter to pick up the book. Replacing it on the carousel, he leans down and whispers theatrically,
"Oh, they heard you."
I vow to never doubt the existence of witches again. We all encounter witches in our childhoods. From fairy tales to films, they are almost always figures of fear or derision, offering enchanted apples to unsuspecting maidens and transforming from cantankerous bicycling spinsters into green-skinned hags on broomsticks. The Cornish village where I spent my earliest years was rumoured to host a coven that met in the woods to do unspeakable things. The 1970s were so saturated with the supernatural that anything seemed possible, not least because my family lived in a succession of very old, very haunted houses. Even our holidays were strange. We once rented a farmhouse in Yorkshire for a week, and every night at 2 o'clock, a cuckoo clock struck loudly. We invited relatives over one evening and went on a cuckoo clock hunt, but couldn't find the damned thing, as my father kept referring to it. But on the day we left, as he began reversing the car down the lane, we hit a large pothole, blowing a tire. We got out to look at the damage, and there, in the hollow, bobbing about in the rainwater like a bath toy, was a broken cuckoo clock. Inevitably, ours was a superstitious household. At Christmas, we hung wessel cups on the tree, but cards with robins on them had to be thrown away because they were bad luck. We saluted and greeted magpies, but dreaded a robin again, hopping indoors in case it brought death. Hair was never cut on Friday, nor washing done on New Year's Day. Both were ill omens, along with peacock feathers used for decoration or an umbrella opened indoors. On it went. My father had a keen interest in nature, history, and the paranormal. His idea of a bedtime story was to pick a tale from the Reader's Digest, Folklore, Myths, and Legends of Britain, while a precarious tower of books by M.R. James, Daphne du Maurier, Peter Haining, Margaret Baker, Dennis Wheatley, and Harry Price took up permanent residence on his bedside table. Day trips revolved around the esoteric, with the most startling involving a time slip experienced by the whole family in the ancient woodlands below Castle Drogo. Every outing had its intrigues, whether it was the wave gathering half the deep and full of voices that deposited a pile of mermaid's purses and marbles at my feet in Merlin's cave at Tintagel, to the invisible book-flinging witches 3 miles along the coast in Boscastle. My perception of witches...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?